of Godhead and his associates, Dasa, Dasa, Anudasa, Krishna Das, Ram Das, Radha Dasi, etc. But also the names are signifying a specific characteristic of the personality also. Like Swayambhu. Swayam means himself. And Bhu means became manifest. The one who became manifest by himself. Isn't that the case with Brahma? Brahma didn't have any father or mother, right? Brahma just appeared straight from the navel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is known as Swayambhu. And this Manu came from Brahma's body. Therefore, he is Swayambhuva Manu. There are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. Now is the reign of the 7th Manu. So, the name of what is the name of the 7th Manu? Vaivashrata Manu. How did this name come? Because he is the son of Vivashvan. Do you remember that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Imang vivashyate yogam praktavan aham abhayam vivashvan manave praho manor ikshakube abrabit. Vivashvan, Krishna is saying, I gave it first to Vivashvan, this knowledge. Bhagavad Gita was given to Vivashvan. Then Vivashvan manave praho. Vivashvan, praho means spoken or said. Vivashvan spoke it to Manave, to Manu. And this Manu is Vivashvan's son. Vivashvan manave praho manor ikshakuve avravit. Then Manu gave it to his son Ikshaku. So, Vaivashyata Manu. We also get the name according to character, the personal, the nature of that person. Like Dhrita Rashtra. Dhrita means holding on to. Rashtra means kingdom. So this, the character of this personality, Dhritarashtra, he's just trying to hold on to the kingdom. Although he's blind and he doesn't have the ability, he is not qualified to become a king, he wants to become a king. So, Dhritarashtra. Also his son Pandu, his bodily complexion was pale. He has a pale complexion. Therefore he is Pandu. Pandu is the meaning one who is whose complexion is pale. Pale complexioned. Pandu. Bhima. From the name sound itself you can understand. Right? One who is extremely powerful. So this way you can see Sanskrit is such a meaningful language. And it's unfortunate that in India they thought that Sanskrit was a dead language. It's nice of Narendra Modi that he is reviving the dead language. He is trying to establish, his government is trying to establish Sanskrit once again. And I just got a message yesterday or day before yesterday that in South India there is a village where people converse in Sanskrit. So it's not dead. Their intelligence was dead. That's why they thought that it was a dead language. Sanskrit is the mother of all languages. And it's important for us to know that because this is how we get to know what we are doing. What we are doing and the need of doing what we are doing. We are enriching ourselves by doing that. Like, this is how we can see. Just tell me, what is the language of a very intelligent person? And what is the language, how does a person who is an idiot, how does an idiot speak? And how does a greatly learned scholar speak? Do they speak the same way? I won't say idiot, like it sounds rather crude. How does a child speak? Is the child's speech very eloquent, very profound, very structured? Is it? And how does a very learned man speak? Do they all speak in the same way? No. How does a learned person speak? Like when it comes to English, we can think of George Bernard Shaw. Look at his writing. And you know what he said? Why can't the English learn how to speak? He was very particular about the way one speaks, and he was very frustrated the way English people speak English. And he said that in America it was not spoken for years. And Frenchmen, no matter whatever they do, at least they have the language right. Their activities may be abominable, but their language is quite structured. And so and as like he said that why doesn't English learn how to speak? Because in England they don't speak English. Once Jayadita Maharaj told me that in South Africa the Indians speak the best English. Something to the credit of the South African Indians. And Jayadita Maharaj is also very particular about the language. Okay, the reason I am pointing this out is because from the language you can see the person's state of intellect. And consider the Sanskrit is so structured, so profound, so it is so just consider the grammar. You know how long it takes one to learn Sanskrit grammar for an ordinary student? Generally, it takes 12 years. Just to learn grammar, because the grammar is so important. The whole language is actually based on the grammars. And and it's so structured, like every word has a root from where it is stemming from. It's stemming from the root. Like as I mentioned, the word manava, human beings, came from the word manu, manu's offsprings. So what is the root? Manu. And probably the root of the word manu is also manas, from the mind, man. And as I was saying, like every word stems from a root and it maintains a structure. And the structure is very like, generally in English you have singular and plural. In Sanskrit there are three numbers. One, two, and more. One person is called ek bachan, ek bachan, dvi bachan, two persons, and bohu bachan, more persons. And also there is grammar also maintains the same standard. One person said, two persons said, many persons said. It will maintain a same structure. And you learn the root. Say, for example, when we are learning Sanskrit, the structure is, say, for example, present tense, one person said, he said, two persons said, two of us said, many of us said. You said, two of you said, many of you said. He said, two of them said, and many of them said. And past tense, present tense, future tense. Like, that's why it takes long, but the thing is, once you got it, you have very clear understanding of the language. Incidentally, I wanted to also mention that when I said in English, in England, English was not spoken. Actually, Bernard Shaw was not talking about general English. He was talking about the common, mainly the Cockneys. It was a long time, and it was based on a drama by Bernard Shaw called Pygmalion. He takes a Cockney. Cockney means like a village Londoner. And the way she speaks. And then he trained her up to speak perfect English. So that is how he was actually pointing out that by training one can learn. So, I mean, our devotee children in England also, they speak very, very nice English, very good English. And so, again, to go back to the point, like, we are getting to know the root of creation, how creation started. Do you remember how creation started? Briefly, Brahma came straight from... Okay, let's go back. Even before, Mahavishnu lied in the causal ocean. As he breathed in the causal ocean, the bubbles that were generated are the universes. Then Mahavishnu entered into each, Vishnu entered into each universe as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And then from his navel came Brahma. So each universe has a Garbhodakshayi Vishnu and each universe has a Brahma who is coming from his navel. And Brahma got enlightenment by the mercy of the Lord, meditating upon Gayatri. So he got to know who he was. And then Brahma actually started the secondary creation. Yesterday I gave an example. Vishnu can be compared to a contractor who is building the house, right? Then after the house is built, then what happens? Then the building is given, handed over to the owner. And then the owner either he himself does it, or gets an interior decorator to decorate the inside of the house. So Brahma in that respect is like the interior decorator. Like I can give an example here. Like these apartments are built. we just built the apartments and we left it up to how the tenant, I mean the owners will do the interior. That we didn't do. And one very nice example is Radha Vinod. He had done up his apartment so nicely. How many of you saw Radha Vinod's apartment? Very good. How do you like it? Yeah. It's very nicely done. So that is Brahma. That is what Brahma did. He is the interior decorator. That means he is filling up, doing up the inside of the universe. Universe already has the place. All the vacant apartments are there. Universe is a 14-story building. 40, out of these 14 stories, 7 stories are underground and 7 stories are above ground. The underground planetary systems are known as Patala Loka. There are Sapta Patal. That Atal, Bital, Sutal, Rasatal, Mahatal, Rasatal and Patal. Atal, Bital, Sutal, Mahatal, Rasatal. No, I'm missing one. Which is that one? Talatal, Mahatal, Rasatal and Patal. So these are the 7 lower planetary systems. And Prabhupada translated these lower planetary systems as subterranean heavenly planets. These lower planetary systems are beautiful places. But they are underground, subterranean. And underground place, there is no light. The light, the region that is above ground, they are lit up by sun and moon. The underground planets don't reach, the sun's light don't reach the underground planets. You know how the underground planets are lit up? Underground planets are lit up by the gems on the heads of the serpents. Sounds like a fairy tale, no? Gems from the head of the serpents. Now you see the possibility. How it is possibility. First of all, you can consider this light, electric light. How is the electric light, how does the electric light function? How does the electric lights light up? There's a bulb and the current is passing through the cable. Does it look like a snake? Okay. There's some possibility. After all, it doesn't sound like fairy tales. Okay, then the other consideration also is, do you know what is electricity? Electricity is fire. Electricity actually is fire. Right? Like when one gets electrocuted, what happens? He gets burnt. Okay, now this is one kind of fire. You know, there is another kind of fire. The other kind of fire is poison. So, you take some poison like high percentage alcohol, when you throw it in fire, what happens? It burns. So, poison is another kind of fire, liquid fire. So snakes have the liquid fire. So just as the electricity is passing and lights up the filament, similarly there are gems on the heads of the serpents, and this liquid fire is actually making them light up. But that condensed fire, anyway, so I was trying to point out that after all, they are not fairy tales. This is factual. And just like here, electric, we are lighting up. At night we light up with electric lights. Similarly, the lower planetary systems are lit up with that kind of light. They are not lit up by sun's light. They are devoid of sun's rays. And there are places also on this planet, an earth planet, where they don't light up with light, sun's light. It's all artificially lit up. I heard, I haven't been there, in Las Vegas, they created an atmosphere like whenever you go there, even in the middle of the day, it'll look the same. It's all artificially lit up. They don't want you to feel that you are in daytime. You are in daylight. Because in daylight, the consciousness becomes purified. Therefore, they create an artificial, like all bad activities go on at what time? People indulge in sinful activities mostly at night. During the daytime, the consciousness is more pure. They can't indulge in sinful activities so much. Therefore, at night, they indulge in sinful activities. So you can see, like, they're the real sin cities. Las Vegas, places like that. Reno, Las Vegas, in America, those places. Incidentally, I think in South Africa, there is a sin city. At least they're honest enough to admit it. Sin city. So, then there are seven higher planetary systems. Seven lower planetary systems, seven higher planetary systems. Now, as I said, like, seven are underground and seven are above ground. So which one is the first one is on the ground floor. Out of the 14 floors, seven are underground and seven are above ground. So one is ground floor. Then first floor, second floor, and so forth goes up to sixth floor. Ground floor, up to sixth floor, seven planetary systems. They are Bhurloka, Bhubarloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Sattaloka. Now, interesting thing to note is when you are underground or above ground, when you want to go out of the house, how did you go out? How did you go out? Through the ground floor. That's why ground floor is so important. Which one is the ground floor? Earth planet. If you want to get out of this universe, which is the way to get out? Ground floor. If you want to get out of the universe, which planet, which region you have to go out? Earth planet. Therefore, human birth in Earth planet is so important. You are so close to the door. It's a matter of just stepping out. Whereas other floors, it's difficult to get out. Now you understand why human life is so important? Why human life is so valuable? Now if we consider, is Earth planet better than lower planetary systems? No one will question that. Is Earth planet better than other higher planetary systems? Huh? What? How many think that's yes? Yes. Okay, if you're given an opportunity to go to the heavenly planets, how many of you know? Okay. Why? Why don't you want to go to the heavenly planet? There is so much enjoyment there. Because in the higher planetary systems, you don't get this facility. And on top of everything, whether in the higher planetary systems or lower planetary systems, all the enjoyment that is provided there, they're only temporary. There, Prabhupada used the example, phantasmagoria. How many of you are familiar with that expression? Phantasmagoria. That doesn't really exist. It's like a dream. It's illusory. It's non-existent. It appears to be there, but is not there. And a very common expression, English expression for that is pie in the sky. A pie in the sky. I think this expression also has been derived from the Sanskrit expression. The Sanskrit expression is Akash Kushum. Akash means sky and Kushum means flower. A flower in the sky. Can there be a flower in the sky? No. So it's just a phantasmagoria. So this is how we establish and we recognize the importance of the Earth planet. It's so important. This Earth planet is meant actually for human beings, although other creatures are there, but especially meant for human beings. The heavenly planets are meant for demigods. And higher planetary systems are meant for sages. Bhur Loka. Then Bhubar Loka, the upper planetary system, than that, is actually meant for some sort of demons. Then Swar Loka, the heavenly planet, which is meant for the demigods. Then Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka and Sattaloka. These four planetary systems are meant for saintly personalities, the sages. And they have, among the sages also there are categories. The sages of lower category are in Maharloka, Janaloka. Then even higher, those who are, that's the region which is, so you can say that heavenly planet is meant for the householders. And Maharloka, Janaloka is meant for the Banaprasthis. And Tapaloka is for the Naishtika Brahmacharis. And Sattaloka is for the associates of Lord Brahma. Now, out of all these places, which is the best place? Which is the best place? Earth planet. And who are the best creatures? Human beings. Their position actually is even more exalted than the residence of Lord Brahma, the Brahma Loka, Satya Loka. Why? Because they can develop Krishna consciousness. They can become devotees of Krishna. They are also devotees of Krishna, the residents of higher planetary systems. They are also devotees of Krishna, but they are mixed devotees. कर्म मिश्रा भक्ति, ज्ञान मिश्रा भक्ति. द रेसिडेंट्स ऑफ हेवनली प्लैनेट्स आर कर्म मिश्रा भक्तस एंड द हायर प्लैनेटरी सिस्टम्स दे आर ज्ञान मिश्रा भक्तस. But the residents of Earth planet has the ability to become Suddha Bhaktas. Where do the Suddha Bhaktas reside? The pure devotees of the Lord reside. The pure devotees of the Lord resides in the spiritual world. The Earth planet is very close to the spiritual world. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead's form is like that of a human being. The original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is two-handed, not four-handed. So the Lord is originally four-handed. I'm sorry, two-handed. Krishnero jateko khela, tar modhe naro lila, naro bopu taharo sharu. Of all the activities and pastimes of Krishna, his pastimes as a human being is the most exalted. Because the human life form is his swarup. Krishna's original form is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead's original form is two-handed, like that of a human being. In that respect, we can consider there is a Christian concept actually that man has been created according to the image of God. Now, I don't know where they got it from. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. The man has been created according to the image of God. So, we can see what is the image of God like? Like that of a human being. So, anyway, like we have this way, we can see what a wonderful opportunity we the human beings have. We have this very wonderful opportunity to go back to the spiritual world. And therefore we must take full advantage. How many of you are ready to take that advantage? So how many of you are ready to make that sacrifice that is necessary for that? What is the sacrifice? Offer your love to Krishna. Of course, that doesn't mean that you should not love anybody else. But rather, you see that everybody is a part and parcel of Krishna, and you love. All the objects of your love are because of their relationship with Krishna. That is the actual way to approach on the spiritual path. Devotees are full of love, but that love becomes manifest in the form of compassion to those who are subordinate to them. Those who are in a lower situation, they receive their love in the form of their compassion. Among equals, it's friendship. And to the superior, it is respect. But when it comes to love, it's for Krishna. And love for Krishna is reflected on different beings in this way. To the subordinates in the form of kripa means mercy and compassion. To the equal, maitri. To the superiors, respect or shraddha. And that is how a devotee develops his relationships with everybody. And And that is why we get to, I mean, it's important to know how to develop a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another important consideration here is body. We have our body, and we develop our relationships through the body. When we are in body consciousness, our relationships are centered around the body. We can see that, like, from whom we got this body, they are our father and mother. We develop our relationship with them. Then we get to see the other individuals who got the bodies, who got their bodies from the same father and mother, so they become our brothers and sisters. Then we develop other relationships with our cousins, with our uncles, with our aunts, with our grandfather. Then one gets married, his wife, then he has children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, if he lives for long enough. So it goes on like that. But all these relationships are centered with which point? Body. And when we develop our spiritual identity, when we begin to develop our spiritual identity, then we begin to develop our relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's actually a transition from one to the other platform. There has to be a transition from one platform to the other. From body platform to the soul platform. And then when we go into that spiritual platform, identifying our identity as spiritual, then all the relationships actually develop according to our spiritual identity. We have seen, Prabhupada used to tell us that when you take to devotional life, you will notice that your enemies have become friends and your friends have become your enemy. Because then the consideration changes. Those who are devotees, we develop our friendship. And those who are not related to Krishna, those who don't accept the process of Krishna consciousness, we don't care for them. And sometimes the animosity also develops in that. And in Krishna consciousness, I have seen devotees, some of the devotees are so strict with their devotional conviction that when the son did not take to Krishna consciousness, the father's attitude is, I don't have anything to do with him. Rejected him. And I admire that attitude. Like, we can see that, yes, he's properly situated in spiritual life. If the son doesn't accept Krishna, although no matter how deep the body's relationship is, he said, okay, I have nothing to do with you. Why? Because he is judging things from the spiritual platform. And anyway, so this is how it all started from, and now we are getting to hear about our past history, our family line. Where is it coming from? Coming from Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma also, there are two lines. One is those who are on the material platform and those who are in the spiritual platform. Brahma's line also has these two very, very specific lines. And most of Brahma's sons took to the material platform. Although very exalted personalities, but they have taken to materialistic side. And some went for liberation. But here we have to also consider, Prabhupada pointed out, material enjoyment and liberation from material bondage is actually two sides of the same coin. Is the two sides of the same coin. Accepting material or rejecting material. So what is the final criteria? Material. So those who are karmis, trying to enjoy the material nature, and those who are gyanis, trying to free themselves from material bondage, they are two sides of the same coin. But then the other consideration is a devotee. He has nothing to do with the material nature. His whole consideration is spiritual. Even his involvement in the material nature also is spiritual. So that is the wonderful thing. So Brahma has two lines in this way, and the other line, one line is karma marga and gyan marga, and the other line is bhakti, devotion. This bhakti line is coming from Brahma through Narad Muni. So that is our actual line. But at the same time, we get to hear about, or we get to know about, the spiritual reality. The creation. And in this way, it is important to know, because in this way, we at the root of it, we get to see that how spiritual is the basis of everything. So how Brahma came directly from Krishna, and how Krishna is the root of, source of everything. So we started off with Brahma's sons, especially Brahma's son and daughter, Manu and Shatarupa. So Manu and Shatarupa is the originator of humankind. Manu's son was Priyavrata and Uttanapada, the two sons of Sayambhupa Manu. And Manu and Shatarupa had three daughters, Akuti, Prashuti, and Debahuti. Yesterday we discussed about Debahuti. Debahuti got married to Kardama Muni, and Debahuti's son was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, appeared as Kapil Muni. That we discussed. Then there is another line, another anecdote that comes in this way, is from his son, Uttanapada. Uttanapada was married, had two wives, Suniti and Suruchi. Suniti's son was Dhruva, and Suruchi's son was Uttam. So king became very attached to Suruchi, and as a result of that, he started to neglect Suniti. Sometimes it happens. This is another thing. In the Vedic culture, A man is allowed to marry, or man is allowed to have more than one wife. Especially the Kshatriyas, they are allowed to have. It's a matter of ability to maintain. Krishna had shown himself, he could maintain 16,000 wives. But Prabhupada pointed out that in this age, one can't even maintain one wife. So at the most one wife and not more than that. Better still is not to get married at all. That's what Prabhupada told me. And I broadcast it quite loudly. Prabhupada told me, offer this life to Krishna. Just offer this life to Krishna. And then he said, don't get married, don't get involved with any woman. So he made it very clear how to offer this life to Krishna. And I feel very thankful to Srila Prabhupada for that, because you know, by doing that, you know, by making me understand that, Prabhupada actually closed the door behind me. Because I came very late, and I had just about 10, after about 10 months of association, Srila Prabhupada left. And I saw that so many devotees who are very staunch in their spiritual conviction, even sannyasis, they left and got married. One astrologer actually told me after Prabhupada left that now many devotees will get married. And those days, probably you don't know how the situation was, that getting married was kind of not a done thing. Everybody wanted to remain a brahmachari, and the goal of life was to become a sannyasi. So when he said that many devotees will get married, I couldn't really accept it, that no, that's not going to happen. And he told me that, you see, Prabhupada was providing the shelter to everyone. And when people will feel the void, that they don't have that shelter of Srila Prabhupada, they will seek for the shelter, and that is why they'll get married. And I saw so many devotees after that, soon after that, started to get married. I mean, I'm not against household life. Like, yes, many devotees will get married. But for the sake of preaching, our movement needs fully committed devotees. And that happens with brahmacharis. Like, many of you had been brahmacharis before and got married. And you can see how it was when you were a brahmachari and how it was after you became married. The time that when you were a brahmachari, you had all the time, fully committed to Krishna consciousness. But then you get married, then your time is shared with Krishna consciousness for Krishna's preaching work and with your wife. Anyway, so I'm waiting for the time when those who are householders will take to Vanaprastha order of life. Then they will become fully engaged again. It will happen. I'm seeing many devotees is happening. When they reach certain age and they see. Actually, yesterday only I was talking to one devotee. I don't want to mention his name. He was telling that now he is free. The children have grown up and soon they are going to be self-sufficient. They can take care of themselves. And then he feels that he is now free, he will be free to become fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. And that is the right way to look at things. Okay, I got into household life. There is a need for maintaining a family. There is a need for maintaining children, having children and helping them to grow up. And then, at certain point, I will. When they are grown up, I have done my duty. Now, panchasardhi vanang brajet. Now that I am 50 years old, children are grown up. Now I can retire. And so that is the right understanding. That's why the Vedic society has been divided into four ashrams. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Banaprastha and Sannas. Not that everybody will become a Brahmachari or remain a Brahmachari. Many of them will get married. But then the society needs also. In that respect, I remember one thing that Prabhupada said, that there is one problem I haven't been able to solve. He said, I want all my brahmacharis to remain brahmacharis, all my boys to remain brahmacharis, and all my girls to get married. So yes, girls have to get married. And the boys, is better to remain a brahmachari. But sometimes, some boys will get married and enter into household life. But the point is, become responsible householders. Actually, in today's world, and even in our society, ISKCON, we are seeing so many irresponsible householders. That is not expected. Householders must be responsible. You got married, you have accepted the responsibility of your wife, take care of that responsibility. Take care of her. Then, you are a householder, you have children. Train up your children properly. Train up your children properly so that they can become very good devotees. And then when they're grown up, okay, offer the responsibilities to them, like Kapil Muni did, like Kardama Muni did. When he retired, he left his wife in the custody of his son, Kapil Muni. And his son also took the responsibility of taking care of his mother. Not only fulfilled her material needs, but gave her the spiritual instruction, enlightened her. So that is the real household life. And then, fine, retire. And then sannyas. So we must remember that Krishna ISKCON society is here to establish, to re-establish that culture. This is the real human civilized society. Human civilization is based on varnashram. Four varnas according to one's character, according to one's propensity, according to one's nature, and four ashrams according to the stage of his life. First brahmachari, then grihastha, then banaprastha, then sannyas. And some of them will go directly from brahmachari to sannyas. Double promotion. So the main point is, in whichever ashram you are, be responsible. Don't be irresponsible. Whichever ashram you are. If you're a brahmachari, be a responsible brahmachari. Not be a brahmachari and flirt around with other young girls. No, that's not right. Be householder. Take care of your household in the right way. And create your household in such a way that it becomes a temple of Krishna. and take care of all the members of your family in such a way that you are taking care of Krishna's devotees. So that is the real human society. So, okay, Uttanapad had two wives, Suniti and Suruchi. Suruchi was very beautiful. Therefore, Uttanapad became attracted to her, so much so that he started to neglect his first wife, Suniti. And in a way, probably Suruchi was also very envious. And Uttanapad was henpecked. So he just went along with his, because of his attachment to his younger wife, he became henpecked, like whatever she wanted, he just went along with that. And he started to neglect his other wife, Suniti. And one day, Uttam, Suruchi's son, was sitting on the lap of the king. And Dhruva also wanted to sit on the lap of his father. So king, the queen rather, Suruchi, didn't like that. And she, as envious she was, she just told that, "You can't sit there. In order to sit there, you have to be born in my womb." So, being insulted in this way, Dhruva left. And Uttanapad did not say anything. Dhruva left. He was only 5 years old. And he went to his mother, crying, and narrated to her what actually happened. And she told that what she said is correct. It's unfortunate that you are born in my womb, who is not the favorite of the king. But the thing is, if you want something, then approach Lord Hari. And she explained, she was very exalted, like your grandfather, your great-grandfather, Brahma, got his position due to the mercy of the Lord. Lord Shiva got his position as Shiva by the mercy of the Lord. So all these exalted personalities have their position due to the mercy of the Lord. So try to approach him and please him, and he can fulfill all your desires. And she explained about the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she told him that how by devotion to him one can please him. And straight away Dhruva went to the forest. Narad Muni came and tried to dissuade him, saying, "Dhruva, you are too young for that. This process of meditation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very, very difficult. It's not meant for young boys like you. When you grow up, you go home now, and when you grow up, then you can try to pursue this path." And in this way, Narad Muni tried to dissuade Dhruva. But Dhruva was adamant. He said, "No, I decided and I'm going to do it. So then Narada appreciated the determination of a Kshatriya boy. He said, this is the wonderful quality of a Kshatriya. He is so resolute in his conviction, he is so resolute in his determination, that even a 5-year-old boy is reacting in this way to take, to fulfill his desire and give a proper response to the insult. He had been insulted. A Kshatriya cannot tolerate an insult. He has been insulted and he is reacting in this way. So then Narad Muni told Dhruva to go to the Madhuban on the bank of Jamuna. Madhuban is Mathura, the holy place where Krishna performs his pastimes. They asked him to go to Mathura on the bank of Jamuna, and he instructed how to meditate upon him. And he gave him the 12-syllabled mantra. This 12-syllable mantra, Prabhupada revealed, is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So that is the mantra that Dhruva Maharaj received from Narad Muni. So here we can see how Narad Muni became the guru of Dhruva Maharaj. To progress in spiritual path, one needs a guru. And guru gives the mantra. And mantra is the means to make spiritual advancement by meditating or chanting on that mantra. So here we can see the pure process of making spiritual advancement. This has been time and time again, this has been pointed out. A qualified devotee gives the mantra to a qualified disciple, and by meditating upon that mantra, one makes spiritual advancement, and eventually the transcendental knowledge is revealed in his heart. So Dhruva Maharaj, upon receiving the instruction from Narad Muni, he went to Madhuban and he prepared himself to meditate upon. He sat down in meditation. In the meantime, Narad Muni thought that Dhruva is making such amazing progress, let me go and see what's happening to his father. So when he went and he found that Uttanapad in a very, very lamenting mood, now he realized that he had done something wrong. And he was very, very repentant. So when Narad Muni came, he started to reveal his heart to him. He said that I have been such a wretched personality, a completely henpecked by my wife. And as a result of that, I just totally disregarded my 5-year-old son. And now he left home and I heard he went to the forest. And probably some wild animal is going to eat him up. So he was very, very repentant, lamenting. So then Narad Muni assured him, don't worry, your son is on the right track. He is meditating to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I met him and I showed him the way. So this is how he pacified King Uttanapad. And then Dhruva Maharaj went to Madhuban and started to prepare himself. And his determination was so resolute, so firm, that he just, taking bath 3 times a day, he was just concentrating on the lotus feet of the Lord. The first month, he fasted for 3 days. He did not eat anything for 3 days, and after 3 days of fasting, he would break his fast, just eating some fruits and roots. Then in the second month, he was fasting for 6 days. And he would break his fast just by eating some dry leaves. In the third month, he was fasting for 9 days. And he would break his fast just by drinking some water. So 9 days of fasting, drinking little water, continue to fast again. Then on the fourth month, he was fasting for 12 days. And then at that time, he was simply sustaining on his life air, breathing. And the fifth month, he stopped breathing. And he was standing on one leg and body not moving, still like a mountain. He was standing on one foot as if he was touching the earth with the foot, with one foot. But his weight, due to his performance of this austerity, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it was so heavy that the earth began to tremble, to shake, as if there was a massive earthquake all over the earth planet. And not only that, the residents, because he stopped breathing, the residents of all three planetary systems are getting suffocated. So demigods approached the Lord. They first approached Lord Brahma, then they went to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead came to Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva was meditating on the form of the Lord in his heart, and when he opened his eyes, he saw that the Lord was standing in front of him. And he saw there is no difference between the personality who you are seeing in the heart and the personality who was standing in front of him. Same personality, looks the same. Same personality. And then the Lord wanted to fulfill his desire. Okay, Dhruva, I know what you want. Okay, you'll have a position which is even higher than your grandfather's, great-grandfather's, higher even than Lord Brahma's position. Brahma's position is the highest in the universe, but Dhruva was awarded a position even higher than that. Which is that position which is higher than the position of Lord Brahma? The position of the planet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he said also that, and Dhruva at that time was lamenting, that why did I want some mundane position as a king? And he admitted, my Lord, I was searching for some broken piece. I was aspiring for some broken pieces of glass. And now seeing you, I realize the insignificance of the broken piece. Because now I found the diamond, the most precious gem. And I repent. Why did I want such a thing? A position in the earth planet. The Lord told him that you will get that position because you desired it. Go through it. And he told him that rule over this planet for 36,000 years. For 36,000 years you rule over the planet, and then you will go to my abode, Dhruva Loka. And in this way, the Lord blessed him and he left. And Dhruva then came back to his... The Lord told him to go back to his home. And when the news arrived that Dhruva is coming, everyone from the palace, his father, his mother, even his stepmother, who insulted him so much that... She also came, and she was also repentant. So in this way we can see that everyone loves a pure devotee. A pure devotee doesn't have any enemy, because his countenance, his demeanor is so sweet that everybody is appreciative of him. So they went out of the city limit to greet Dhruva. Dhruva was brought back, and then his father, in course of time, decided to retire, making Dhruva the king of his throne, and he accepted Banaprastha order of life and went to the forest. Dhruva became the king of the earth planet, including the oceans. Now, during Dhruva's time, there was inconceivable prosperity everywhere. And that is the sign of a good king. Under a good king's rule, everything prospers. Like, even if he is in the middle of a desert, the desert becomes fertile due to his pious activities. A desert becomes like paradise. That's what happened when Yudhishthir Maharaj was ruling. It was told that, okay, give them half the kingdom. Dhritarashtra had to agree to give them half the kingdom, because they had the right to rule over the kingdom. One brother gets half and the other brother's children gets half. But which half was given to them? A barren piece of land, like desert, was given to them. Yudhishthira Maharaj accepted it, fine. We'll go there. And then what happened? When Yudhishthira Maharaj went there, my Dhanav, the engineer and architect of the demons, was indebted to Arjun, that if someday you need me, please let me know. So Arjun called him and said, okay, we have to build a city. So build it. Vasudev himself came and did the Vastu calculation. So the most beautiful city was built. And because these pious people were there, all the other pious people also shifted there. And when the population grew there, the Vaishyas thought, oh, a good possibility of making money, developing my business. So they shifted there. So in this way, a barren piece of land, a desert, became the most flourishing kingdom. So that is the result of the piety of pious people. Wherever they go, prosperity prevails. So in this way, we saw during Dhruva Maharaj's reign, everything became so prosperous. Then Dhruva Maharaj's brother one day, Uttam, went for hunting in the forest. And when he was in the forest hunting, he was surrounded by the Jakshas, and the Jakshas killed him. So Suruchi was so attached to her son that she just ran to the forest, and as if her whole life is now been ruined. And this way we can also see that the situation of the material, or can say that paradox of materialistic way of life. She was so attached to her son, she wanted her son to become the king, and now he is dead. Dhruva became so upset hearing that news that the Jakshas have killed his brother. So he decided to wipe out all the Jakshas from this world. So he went there and he started to kill all the Jakshas. I'm not going to spare a single Jaksha. You killed my brother, I'm going to kill all of you. So then, when Dhruva was annihilating all the Jakshas, then Sayambhava Manu himself came and pacified him. My son, try to understand that things happen in this world according to the will and design of the providence. Everyone is subjected to his destiny, and the destiny is fraught by one's own action. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa. In the material nature, everything happens by the arrangement of the modes of material nature and the karmic reactions. One acts, and according to his action, he gets the reaction, which takes place in different modes, and he's subjected to that. He is like a puppet, being controlled by guna and karma. But ahankara vimuratma karta hamit mannate. Being bewildered by his false ego, a living entity, a conditioned living entity, thinks that he is the doer. So in this way, Sayambhava Manu advised him. And then Dhruva stopped. The king of the Jakshas is Kuvera, who is the treasurer of the demigods. Kuvera came and blessed Dhruva Maharaj. He was prepared to give him any benediction that he wanted. So, being blessed by his grandfather and Kuvera, Dhruva Maharaj went back to his kingdom, and as I mentioned, he was destined to rule over this planet for 36,000 years. After retiring, after 36,000 years of ruling, Dhruva Maharaj decided to retire. And he gave his kingdom to his son, and he went to Badarikashram, up in the Himalayan mountain. Badarikashram, a very holy place where Vasudeva also resides eternally there. So Dhruva Maharaj went there to spend the rest of his life in the association of the saintly personalities. These saintly personalities, the sages, they were there. Dhruva Maharaj retired and started to spend his time there. And then, in course of time, a chariot came from Vaikuntha. Two personalities, two associates of the Lord, Nanda and Sunanda, met Dhruva Maharaj and told him, the transcendental chariot has been sent to you to go to Vaikuntha. So Dhruva Maharaj accepted that offer. And he went and took bath, bade farewell, took leave from all the sages there, and then he circumambulated the chariot 3 times. And as Dhruva Maharaj was about to climb onto the chariot, he saw death personified with folded hands, begging him, "Please bestow your mercy upon me." And Dhruva Maharaj stepped onto death's head to climb onto the chariot. So this way we can see that how devotees also face death. But it is not that the death overpowers them. But death actually begs, death personified, begs their mercy before they leave this planet, leave this world. And Dhruva Maharaj bestowed his mercy by placing his foot on his head to climb onto the chariot. So this is how death comes to a devotee, seeking the mercy of the devotee. So Dhruva Maharaj's chariot was leaving, going through the space back to Vaikuntha. Then Dhruva Maharaj remembered his mother, who actually led him into the spiritual path. And he considered, "Oh, I am leaving, I am going back to the spiritual sky. What about my mother?" So he expressed that concern to his associates in the chariot. And they said, "Don't worry. See this chariot that's going ahead of you? Your mother is in that chariot. She is going ahead of you." Yes? So this way we can see that when someone takes to Krishna consciousness, then those who help him in this path of Krishna consciousness, they also derive the spiritual benefit. And sometimes I feel that probably that's my hope, that some of my disciples will become pure devotees, and due to their sukriti, due to their spiritual achievement, I will get an entry to the spiritual sky. So this is how Dhruva Maharaj went back to the spiritual sky. So isn't it wonderful? Isn't it such a wonderful example to follow? So this is why these stories are so important. Through these stories we get such an important message, such an important spiritual message. Like, we don't have to worry about death. Let us surrender unto Krishna. We may have various material desires, doesn't matter. Krishna in the heart, he knows what we want. And if we become a devotee, Krishna will fulfill our desires. And as a matter of fact, when Krishna fulfills our desires, probably we'll feel bad. Why did I desire this? Why a diamond, the most precious diamonds were there available for me. Why did I go for some broken piece of glass that cuts my finger? So material desires appear to be like that when we take to pure devotional service. So now that we found it, just as Dhruva Maharaj found the path of pure devotion by the mercy of Narad Muni, we all have got the path, we have all got the access to that spiritual path by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. So let us take full advantage of this wonderful benediction. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Madhavendra. Give him the mic.
Hare
Yeah, you see, even say we can see Manu is a human being. He's the progenitor. In some cases, the sages in the higher planetary systems also have been identified as human beings. So we have to understand that the human beings are not only in the Earth planet, they are also in other planetary systems. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Yes, Jamuna Priya. Well, in Bhagavatam it has been mentioned, but as you mentioned, that his forefathers also get the spiritual benefit, get delivered. That must have happened to them also. Hare Krishna. Yes, Mark. Oh, Bhavatarini, do you have a question? Okay, the mic is here, so give it to her. Yeah, they're separate planets, situated in different planes. Different planes, yeah. Give it to Mark, yeah. Him. Oh, that village in South India, yeah.
They've been speaking Sanskrit since the Vedic times, or?
Well, it must have been. Yeah, most likely, you see, Sanskrit was being spoken maybe even few hundred years back, right? But they continued that tradition. Yeah. They have been?
In Canada, they are making such a horrible way. Particularly in the history of his Holiness, Kama Krishna Maharaj, and other devotees who left this planet in that way. What's the reason for that? Why do devotees in the last part?
Well, how one leaves his body is not so important. Right, but where he goes, that's what matters. Right, a devotee can leave his body in any way, at any time, at any place. But because we have to understand that because he has been a devotee, engaged in serving the Lord, he will be rewarded in the most wonderful way. So, we should not consider, whether a devotee left his body in a peaceful manner or in a difficult way, doesn't matter. Mm. Okay. Hey, Manga. Yeah, Dhruva Loka. Like you can see, just as this planet, Dhruva Loka, is fixed, and all the other planets, other stars and luminaries are rotating around that, as if they're circumambulating. So which place is fixed and center of everything? The abode of the Lord. So that is the abode of the Lord in this universe. Yeah, it's non-different, the spiritual sky. Yes. Hari Bol. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj and Bhagavad Pranam. I want to ask that when we chant the Vishnu pronouns, Krishna or Krishna, as a doubt in that. Is Krishna both we can chant?
What's that? When we chant? तुम हिंदी में बोलेगा? हिंदी में बोलो बता। कृष्ण बोले यार। कृष्णा जैसा बोलना चाहते हो वैसे बोलो। जैसे बल्कि प्यार से बोलो। हाँ। जैसे कोई बच्चा जब माँ को बुलाता है तो माँ क्या बोलता है? वो ठीक से मेरा नाम प्रोनाउंसिएशन नहीं हुआ है। हाँ, बच्चा जब माँ बोलता है तो माँ एकदम तुरंत वहां पहुंच जाती है। क्यों? क्योंकि बच्चा के प्रति माँ का प्रेम और माँ के प्रति बच्चा का प्रेम। हाँ, इसलिए प्रेम ही असल सवाल है। कैसे बोलते हो कृष्ण? अगर कृष्ण की जगह कोई चाइनीज अगर कृष्णा बोलेगा तभी कृष्ण सुनेंगे और उसको जवाब देंगे। यस सत्य। Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you. I have a few questions. Let's see. There are quite a few questions from internet. Nrisinghananda from South Africa. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, where do the demons headed by Shukracharya live? Do they also living in the upper planetary systems with the demigods? Yes, Shukracharya has his own planet. The star which is known as Venus is the abode of Shukracharya. So yeah, Shukracharya's situation is like that, like an exalted sage. He has his abode there. Giridhari Priyadas from San Diego, California, Santa Barbara actually. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, I never understood how by Dhruva Maharaj's having stopped breathing, the demigods began to suffocate. Seems like if he stopped breathing, there would be more air to breathe for others. Sorry, Giridhari Priya, you are wrong. You see, his consciousness becomes so tuned up to the Lord's consciousness that when he stops breathing, the Lord also stops breathing. And as a result of that, the supply of oxygen stops in this planet. In simple words, I will answer your question that way. It is not that because one person stops breathing and then there's more air for others to breathe. But it is not like that. It is Dhruva Maharaj's consciousness now has become so tuned in with the Lord's consciousness that when he stopped breathing, the Lord stopped breathing. And as a result of that, when the Lord stopped breathing, there was no supply of oxygen. That is what made that condition. Ravi from Dallas, does Krishna always grant the desires of those who try to approach him? What's the time now, Ravi, in Dallas? It's about 2 o'clock now in the morning. Thanks for your participation and thanks for the interest that you are showing. I noticed that you had been watching during the Bhagavatam class also in the morning, and you're also watching. Actually, when I saw from Dallas, then I considered, and then I felt that, oh, Dallas, now it's 10:30, or maybe 11 o'clock. Maybe it's not that late. But now, it's 1 o'clock, or maybe even 2 o'clock. Yes, your question, Ravi, is... Does Krishna always grant the desires of those who try to approach him? You see, Krishna knows everything, especially, you see, in the material nature, the living entities get a chance to act according to their own desire. That is what material world is. An opportunity for living entities to fulfill his desires, own desires. Whereas in the spiritual sky, everyone is tuned into Krishna's desire. That is the difference between material condition and spiritual situation. And so when one approaches Krishna, even though he may have some material desire, and if those desires are going to be conducive to his spiritual advancement, then Krishna will fulfill those desires. But if those desires are not conducive, Krishna will not fulfill those desires. You see, when one surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna takes his responsibility. Now we are in the material nature, we are trying to be independent. Independent means we don't want to depend upon Krishna's desire, Krishna's plan, Krishna's arrangements. So we are in that situation. But when you surrender to Krishna, then Krishna says, okay, fine. Now you are coming under my care. I'll take care of you. And according to the purity of the devotee's surrender, Krishna will reciprocate. So when the devotee's intention is pure, then Krishna will take care of him. And if there is some desire, and if he feels that it's needed, or it is needed for the benefit of this world, then Krishna says, okay, fulfill that desire. Like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj surrendered to Krishna, but Krishna knew that Dhruva Maharaj had some desire, and he decided to fulfill that desire. And he knew that will be beneficial for the world. Like when a pure devotee rules the world, what happens to this world? Do the world benefit? When a good leader like that leads the world. So apparently it may seem that Krishna is fulfilling his desire, but actually Krishna is fulfilling his purpose as well. Let the world get some good guidance. Let this people become the leaders of the society, and let them guide the society for the benefit of the entire society. Another question from Nishingananda. Second question, Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, it is mentioned that Dhruva Lok is never destroyed because it's a spiritual planet within the material creation. In this planet destroyed during total annihilation? No. The abodes of the Lord are not destroyed at the time of total annihilation also. Like for example, because they are extensions of the spiritual sky. Therefore, like for example, Vrindavan, Mayapur, they'll never be destroyed, even at the time of total annihilation. That abode of the Lord will always be there. Unaffected by the effect of time. Suraj Parmanand, Mauritius. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, is Banaprastha Ashram still possible in this Kali Yuga? And how can we identify a pure devotee? So you have two questions. Is Banaprastha possible in the age of Kali? Yes. But it is done in a little modified fashion. You don't go to the forest, but you go to the ISKCON temple. You don't go to the forest, but you go to the spiritual world. So that is the advantage of this age. You can take Banaprastha directly in the spiritual sky, which is the abode of the Lord, ISKCON's temple. So if you want to take Banaprastha, you can join one of the temples in Mauritius and render service there. Marian from Leicester, regarding Suruchi, what is the correct response for us if we become usurped in case of someone else is given preferential treatment? Just become more humble than a blade of grass and tolerate like a tree. That's the attitude that a devotee takes. Quite a few questions today, huh? Oh, more questions from internet. Even more there. Okay, so let's stop taking questions now, because there are quite a few questions to be answered. Radha Vinod Das. Is that you, Radha Vinod? No mention of the place, so I thought it's probably... Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. We are thinking to make an announcement. Oh, okay, it's from you, Radha. We are thinking of making an announcement that we have a manufacturing project for altar, deity dresses and murti. Anyone is interested visiting the workshop, please contact Brajendra Krishna Prabhu, your servant, Radha Vinod Das. Okay, thank you for... So everyone heard the announcement? Okay. Why don't you arrange someone to visit those places and see how we do it? You see, one thing I can tell you, that Ujjain is the youngest, one of the youngest temples. But Ujjain today has become the most active temple. For example, the facilities that we have here, the things that we are doing here, nowhere in the temple, nowhere in the world, those activities are going on under one roof. For example, we are making altars for the deities. And these altars, I don't want to say that beforehand. You go and see, and you will see the quality of these altars. Okay. In Bombay and in Gujarat and other places, altars are being made. But nowhere they do the gold leafing. No altar maker is doing the gold leafing with 24 carat gold leaves. ISKCON is the only temple I mean, Ujjain, ISKCON Ujjain is the only temple where you're not only getting the altars complete, but also gold lift. If you want to have gold lift altar, you have to make it somewhere and then take it somewhere else to get the gold lifting done. But here, under one roof, we are doing that. Okay. How many of you are getting deity dresses? How many of you get the deity dresses? Where do you get the do you buy the deity dresses from somewhere else, or you are making it in your own temple? That's what I mean. You don't make in the temple itself. You get it done from Vrindavan. But here we are making the deity dresses in the temple. And what did you see the quality of the deity dresses? Like how many temples have Shringar like we have? That's another thing. We make our own deity dresses to dress our deities. And also we take orders. We don't make a big announcement, big publicity, because we have limitations. To tell you frankly, what I'll tell you, like, we can make one dress a month. And we here need 8 dresses a year. So we can make 12 dresses. Out of 12 dresses, 8 dresses are for our own consumption, for our own use. So we have options for making 4 dresses. So some special temples, like for example New Jersey Temple in America, and I think Lanesia in South Africa, few temples are taking, and we are accepting their orders. But we have our capacity is full. So, but if some temples want, we can make arrangements by increasing our staff, which we are not doing right now. Okay, so deity dresses. And what other announcement you wanted me to make, Radha Vinod? Oh, right. That's another thing. Only place in ISKCON where Prabhupada's deities are made. I mean, some places are making, but I'll tell you, when they see our deities, for example, the temple in Milan, they had their deities made by some other place. Anyway, I don't want to mention. But when they saw, is there anyone from Milan? Anyone from Italy? Oh, they are not here as yet. What happened to the Italian devotees? They were, anyway, they haven't come as yet. So, in Milan, when they saw our deities, they took the deity that they had in Prabhupada's altar in the temple, they placed this deity from here on the main altar, and they kept the other deity somewhere else. So this is another thing that we are doing. We are not only doing Prabhupada's deity murtis, we can cast anything. And probably you have seen the Guru Parampara, Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So, this Guru Parampara, I think it's most beautifully done. And mind you, this sculpting is done by our devotee. Amal Bhakta, he did the casting, and he is in charge of that casting department actually. So tell me, in which temple they are making altars complete with gold leaf? Which, besides Ujjain? Which temple is making proper deities? Which temple is making their own deity dresses and also supplying to the other temples? Not even big temples like Vrindavan, Mayapur, which has been there, which is our world headquarters, still there, not happening. Whereas Ujjain, which started only a few years back, we have this. And on top of that, which temple has Ayurvedic clinic? And this Ayurvedic clinic has been so effective that wherever the devotees are coming and getting the treatment, when they go back, the news is spreading like wildfire. Like when I started, we started only recently actually. This Ayurvedic clinic we started in October. And guess who was the first patient? Me. And some devotees came. Actually at that time three devotees came to take treatment. Two came from South Africa, one came from Switzerland. And one of these patients from South Africa had ulcerative colitis. It's a kind of a disease that doesn't have any cure. She told me that she had been getting the treatment for last many, many years, and she had been taking so many medicines and she is still suffering so much. And you know what happened to her? After taking the treatment for 4 days, she stopped taking all medicines. She didn't have any problem. And when she completed the treatment after 3 weeks, now she's back in South Africa, she doesn't have to touch any medicine at all. She's completely cured. There is one, she actually wrote an article. How many of you saw that article? Okay. So that article says it all, what happened to her. And there is another devotee from South Africa who got cured of, he had many complications, Tribhanga Sundar. Now he's back and he's okay. And so then some other devotees also got treated and they got such good results. So what is happening now? Wherever they're going, they're telling what benefit they got after this treatment. Now mind you, there are Ayurvedic treatments. Actually, we got that idea from the South Indian Ayurvedic clinic. And some people, those who have been to that clinic, took the treatment and got the treatment here, admitted that our setup is much better and our treatment is much better. And for that matter, I can tell you, someone who is just sitting here is Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya told me that the treatment, and he, not only him, his wife also, Chitra Devi, they told me yesterday that this treatment is much better than there. It's Krishna's mercy, you know. What is missing there is Krishna consciousness or Krishna's mercy. So here, this is the added flavor, or the most essential flavor actually. And so, tell me, which temple has all these facilities? You want to hear something more? Every day we are feeding 25,000 children. No, I think the number dropped now. It's about 21,000 children. Because the Muslim school didn't want to take. Because they felt that... You know why the Muslim school didn't want to take? Because they found out that we are offering all the prasad to Jagannath. Okay, don't tell them. Okay, thank you very much, Radha Vinod. So you make an arrangement for a conducted tour inside. Like the day probably they go out, that don't take very long. Or one of these days, when would you like to have this tour? In the afternoon or in the morning? Okay, how many of you want to go and have a tour? Okay, How many of you would prefer to have it in the afternoon? How many of you would like to have it in the morning? How many of you would like to have it at night? Okay, so we can take them in two groups. Those who want to go in the morning, here is Brajendra Krishna. Come, Brajendra Krishna. Hare Krishna. So, Brajendra Krishna, you can see, he's a young man. He came in contact with Krishna consciousness after we came to Ujjain. That was about 7 years back. When did you come in contact with ISKCON?
It was March 2007.
2007. Okay, very good. It was the first batch. He was studying in Bhopal. So he was an engineering student in Bhopal. He completed his studies, engineering. Then he had to do the compulsory service for 2 years working outside. That's one of the things that we admit, we expect out of them. That not just join the temple straight away. We work outside for 2 years and see how beautiful this outside world is. And then if you think that Krishna consciousness is even better, then you can come and join. So Brajendra Krishna is a qualified electronic engineer. Electrical engineer. And he joined. And he is taking care of, he along with his friend Abhay Charan are taking care of the altar department. Very, very efficiently they are running the department. So, Brajendra Krishna, we can have arrangement of the conducted tour of that inside. And that also reminds me, how many of you have joined from the universities or colleges? Radhapad, you are one, I can see. Stand up. Stand up. How many of you? So, these are all... how many of you are from engineering background? Okay, so all of them are from engineering college. See, they have joined as full-time devotees. And there are quite a few waiting. Okay, sit down. They all are full-time devotees serving in the temple. And quite a few of them are also waiting after they fulfill the condition of serving outside, after their graduation, serving outside for 2 years. How many of you are in the waiting list? Get up, stand up, identify yourselves. Very good. Achha, now probably you know, those who are in used to familiar with Indian condition, the best educational engineering institution is IIT. And how many of you are from IIT? Okay. So the cream of India's youth. All of them are actually cream of India's youth. They are all from engineering background. There is IIT and there is NIT, National Institute of Technology. Indian Institute of Technology, National Institute of Technology. How many of you are from NIT? Okay. So why didn't you stand up? Okay, you stood up before. And so these are the future of our temple here. And when they join, I'm sure Krishna consciousness will be, there'll be an explode, Hare Krishna explosion here. Thank you. Okay, so Brajendra Krishna will take you on a conducted tour of the deity department. They'll show you how the carving is going on, how the gold leafing is going on, all the different aspects will be shown. Okay, tomorrow morning.